Welcome to ATS Mix.
I think until you start asking questions, you know, you're just going to buy whatever's offered to you on the 6 o'clock news.
ATS Mix.
This isn't a talk show, it's a freak show.
From AboveTopSecret.com.
I'd also be skeptical of the people who are out there selling conspiracy theories.
The Internet's most popular conspiracy theory discussion board. ATS Mix. From AboveTopSecret.com.
In the name of Christ, just let us in!
Starts now.
Hey, Dave, I've always kind of wondered about what your childhood was like. Did you have a good childhood?
Why do you always do this to me? What is this? Would you like me to lay on the couch over here in the studio and
just think of me as Dr. Laura?
Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, all things considered, I had a decent childhood. Why do you ask?
Well, John? I'm just kind of wondering what kind of kid you were. Were you the type of kid like that took a magnifying glass and burnt flies or caterpillars and stuff like that? Were you that type of kid?
I burned the living crap out of things.
Oh, you're kidding me.
Yeah. If it crawled and I had one of those little Sherlock Holmes things.
Yeah.
They got disintegrated. Actually, I was not that cruel, but I had a real keen interest in science and that kind of stuff when I was a little kid, yeah.
Now, did you ever run around and catch, or at least try to catch, lizards?
I caught a bunch of lizards.
Really?
In fact, I had a lizard farm at one time.
No way.
Yeah, sure did. Yeah, you think I'm kidding you? No,
the,
I had
the Dave Rabbit Lizard Farm.
I had 347 lizards at one time when I was 11 years old.
And did you have names for them?
I named every one of them.
All right. I'm going to call you bluff on this one. Give me some of the names of some of your lizards.
Larry,
here, Mo,
Larry.
Mo, Curly.
And those were just the three funny lizards.
That's right.
I mean.
Yeah, they stood out amongst the rest of them.
Yeah, I mean, I could watch Larry, Bo, and Curly all night.
Oh, man.
And I like lizards and stuff. Now, where are we going with this?
All right, I was going to give you a factoid. I know you love factoids.
I love factoids.
All right, here we go.
Inside joke, folks. You'll get the hint. About
or maybe not. All
or
right.
Maybe not.
Approximately 21,500 birds, reptiles, and mammals have been discovered and classified by scientists. Did you know this?
I did not know that until just then.
Did you also know, or not know,
you mean
that they are,
not know.
That's what I just said, that there are approximately 837 more that are suspected to be alive on Earth, but that have had absolutely no contact with humans. And this data comes from Scientific American, November of 2001.
Isn't that you slick-tongued devil. You've been doing your research, haven't you?
I have been doing a little research, and I'll tell you why.
I love it when you throw numbers out that I can't dispute.
That's right. And the reason why I did this research is because we have a gentleman that we did a kind of a lunch side chat impromptu interview with. That,
I know what you're talking about.
Yes, this was in San Jose. It was you and I, Springer, and John Lear. And John Lear introduced us to one of the speakers that was at the UFO Expo by the name of John Rhodes. And John Rhodes is a fascinating gentleman, as you would say. Uh-huh. That's fascinating. And he has a website called reptoids.com. And that's Reptoids, reptoids.com. Fascinating site, has a bunch of facts, a lot of information. Man. I got to be honest with you, in the type of research that I have normally been exposed to, this wasn't one of them. I am not familiar. Well, why are you laughing?
What does
or
that
did that
say?
Just sound funny?
It wasn't one of them.
Yeah, well, it's not. Reptoids are not one of the subjects that I really had delved deep.
Okay, got it. Yeah, okay, yeah. You looked into a bunch of stuff, and Reptoids was not one of them. Got it. Okay, now I understand what you're saying.
Anyway, I was fascinated with his website, and I think our members and listeners would be fascinated also. And so,
great
please,
website.
Yeah, we encourage you to please go. Once again, that website would be
www.reptoids, that's Reptoids, lizardsandlizards.com. You got to have the S on there, or it goes to some other wacky thing to where it's like three lizards, you know, doing a Larry Moore and Curly routine. I don't know.
John Lear introduced us to John Rhodes. Now, up till that time, I'm going to be perfectly honest here, I had heard the name, but I had not known of the research that he had done. Had you?
Exactly. Well, no. And you know, and if I may interject something, when we...
Which you would do anyway.
I know. When we first got heads up about the Bay Area UFO Expo, and I saw John Rhodes' name, and you remember when we went to the website and we started saying, you know, they're talking about, you know, and John was one of the... he was one of the co-hosts, I guess, as it were. And that very first time we met him, remember? And I mean, I thought, God, what a fascinating guy. And he was running around here and there, and we didn't think we'd even have a chance to chat with him. So tell how this all came about.
We sat down and we had a wonderful lunch. Bringer sprung for the lunch, which, of course, I think he mentions about 20 times in the interview. And so I edited out about 19 of those. So you're not going to hear him say that 20 times. I do a lot of editing. Also, this interview was extremely lengthy. Now, you're going to think, wow, really? Because the interview now is extremely lengthy. Well, damn straight it's extremely lengthy, because there's just too much information there that I couldn't cut out.
Real quick, we go to eat lunch. We see John Lear sitting at the table. He invites Springer, Johnny, and I over to the table. John Rhodes has just ordered his food. We sit down there, and all of a sudden I figured, if we're not going to get another chance like this to have him sitting right, and he was on the inside of me, so he couldn't get out without me moving, I whipped the recorder out and said, let's do lunch chat with John Rhodes. It was kind of a joke at first, and then we started the recorder, and you are going to hear an absolutely riveting, amazing one-hour interview during lunch with John Rhodes. Now, tell them the bonus of this.
Ding, 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 ding. The bonus is, right before we started recording this introduction for this interview, got off the phone with John Rhodes. He agreed to letting us interview him again. So right after we get through doing the little bit of production here, in about 40 minutes or so, we're going to have another interview with him.
You guys and girls, you're absolutely going to fall in love with John Rhodes like we all did. So let's give it a listen, John.
All right, buddy. Here we go.
ATS Mix.
Yeah, listen up.
From above, top secret.
Jesus Christ.
.com. Featured interview.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the ATS Mix Show. I'm Dave Rabbit.
I'm Johnny Anonymous.
And we have Springer, we have John Lear, and we're having lunch chat with John Rhodes. Hi, John.
How are you doing?
I'm doing great. What we're going to do, folks, is because John is such a busy person, not Lear. Lear's been doing nothing but running around trying to put banners on chicks all day. But because John Rhodes is so important.
When you say the word chicks, you actually mean those lovely ladies.
I love that word.
Yes. John Rhodes has a website called Reptoids.com.
It's called what?
Reptoids.com.
I love Reptoids.
He is the world's foremost authority on reptoids, the history, and what's going on. And believe me, if you don't believe in reptilians before you talk to them, you'll believe in them after. He is so knowledgeable on the subject, and I'd like to hear him, you know, give us a few minutes on.
Oh, God, now I'm going to have to buy John Lear's lunch.
Oh, yeah.
But they probably dinner, too. You
but John, it'll be a cheap lunch.
I'm just glad for once I don't have to buy something.
Yeah, thank you. Where do I start, John? I
mean, at the beginning, how you got interested in the subject?
I think it was started years ago when I recognized some of the drawings that Glenn Dennis had given to the public, that based on the illustrations that the nurse drew for him in Roswell, New Mexico. Glenn Dennis was the mortician in Roswell, and he knew a nurse that worked on the base. And a lot of people, the backstory about Roswell is easily discovered on the internet in regards to Glenn Dennis, but he was asked for the coffins, the hermetically sealed coffins for children and such. And he had a friend of his that was a nurse. And the incident after Glenn was kicked off the base, told, don't come on to the base, you know, because this is more dangerous than you can ever imagine. You have to get out of here. Because he felt like a local. He felt like he was welcome. And, you know, they had made him feel welcome before, but something was different about this time around. Later on, he connected with a nurse of his, friend of his, that was on base, and she said that she was present during the examination of the bodies. And when she had the nurse had drawn some illustrations of some of the what the body looked like and provided them to Glenn Dennis. One of the earmarks that I noticed that was really interesting is that the beings had little circular pads on their fingertips. And from a cryptozoological point of view, you see circular pads on the bottoms of fingertips of, like, geckos or lizards because they climb trees, arboreal lizards, because in those pads are small microscopic barbs that help adhere to really tiny irregularities in otherwise a smooth surface. And there's also weak force, magnetic force involved. And that gets too complicated to talk about. But the bottom line here is you recognize something in the drawing that had the signature of a reptile. And then you put that together with some of the other reports that Leonard Stringfield drew out in interviews with witnesses. And you discover and hear about how when they did see the bodies had skin like that of a reptile or a dinosaur. And as a matter of fact, Wendell Stevens, I think, when he wrote his book, UFO Crash at Aztec, with Steinman, they have at least two or three pages dedicated to the fact that this thing was indicating something more of a dinosaur or more of a lizard in its physical appearance. But it's interesting how for years we concentrated on the craft and the parts and the eyewitnesses, but very little attention has really been paid to what they said that the physical bodies looked like. And when you can correlate that with known physical appearances of different life forms here on Earth, for me, all of that indicated that there was something going on that said that this was maybe more terrestrial than extraterrestrial. Now, I'm not denying an extraterrestrial presence on the planet, or even the extraterrestrial presence of reptoids or reptilians from off planet. I think by now, a long time ago, they may have left, spread across in their explorations of space, just like we're trying to do as a primitive culture, and compared to them, and they may have gone on long voyages and only plan to return at certain times. Getting off subject, more on subject, I should say, is that you have all these prophecies talking about 2012 and the return of the potential return of something remarkable is going to happen on the planet, and then you have the Mayans and the Aztecs and the people of Mexico talking about the return of Quetzalcoatl, which is also another serpent image coming back at this time.
Yeah, that's right.
But also, Jesus was associated with the snake as well. The Gnostics believed that in the Garden of Eden, the serpent was the benefactor of intelligence and benevolence upon mankind, because without it, we would have been just cattle in the field or gardeners, when really we were lifted up to a higher state. So when you look at the confluence of ancient history and modern history, and you hear the same reports coming from ancient times, and you start correlating that with reports coming in modern times, you start to recognize, well, maybe we're actually encountering something that's native to the planet, that's remained hidden from us for a long time, and is about to make a reappearance, maybe to change management. And I know there's a lot of people out there that feel that the only way to change management is for a more superior force to come down and do it.
Right.
More superior than humans to come down and do it. A lot of people would hope that would be done by force. Some people believe it's going to be done through natural catastrophes where maybe just the surface of the Earth is left for us because we don't have a reservation and an underground base, and they might hide out for 1,000 years down there. God, you know, John, they have enough supplies down there. You know, they can grow their own food. They can do anything they want. Probably thousands of years.
Way more than anybody has.
Oh.
The remotest idea.
Right. It's not just, you know, packages of insurer. <You know?
laughs> Right.
Like in the asteroid movie, what was that?
Oh, I know. Yeah, I know what you're
talking about.
He goes
to the basement of the White House and behind the president.
Yeah,
all this insurer.
Yeah.
Oh, great product placement.
Yeah.
For the end of the world or the end of your life, drink insurer.
Yeah, we love it. I love that drink.
Makes great shakes.
It does make a great shake.
Tastes great to the last drop or the last day.
Usually at the same time.
John, there had to be something that got you really into this. You know, I asked John when we did an interview with him, the John Lear miniseries as it's become known as on AboveTopSecret.com. But what was the one thing that you could remember as a kid or growing up or whatever that you said, wow, and it got you to where you really got in tune with what you were able to now achieve and talk about?
I really believe there's an island off of Malaysia. It's called Penang Island, P-E-N-A-N-G. And if you get on Google Earth, or something like that, one of the mapping programs, and you go to the island, you'll see on the topmost of the hill, there's a large structure, there's multiple structures of buildings, including a large one. And that's where I went to school. It's surrounded by jungle. It was a military boarding school, British military boarding school. And because we lived overseas, like with John, everything to do with aviation, I was entered into the boarding school at the age of about 5 and a half or 6. So I had early departure from family. And having that and being put into a very foreign realm, you can imagine at 6 years old being shoved up in the jungle.
Yeah.
I spent a lot of my time alone and usually on the periphery of the properties, wandering off in the jungle. My God, if they had ever found out, that would have been the end of it, you know? But I was a bad boy even then, going places where I shouldn't go.
But, sticking his nose where they don't want it stuck.
That's right. But I spent a lot of time out there, and I didn't play with the other kids. Instead, I was picking up the stick ants. I was looking at lizards. I was being one with nature out there. So later on in life, I went through different types of careers, trying to find myself, as many people do. And what happened was, is that when I've known in the back of my mind, I'd heard about aliens and UFOs, and I was open-minded to it, not closed off at all, but it just wasn't a focus, like it is for most people out there.
Right.
They believe in it, but it's just not their focus.
Right.
Okay, for us, it's our passion. And if it wasn't passion, right, John, you wouldn't be doing it at all, because there's no payoff in it.
No.
Right. There's just harassment, there's ridicule, there's difficulties in our relationships. You know, it's being with wives saying, go out and get a real job.
Yeah, in there.
And so I think I was preconditioned through my childhood to think outside the box, only because we lived overseas and we saw a lot of things going on that when we got back to the States, we realized it wasn't this, people weren't aware of what was really happening overseas in many different areas. And it encourages you to think outside that box and to think what else is going on. And it really takes just one or two instances of your life to make you realize it's all being hidden.
Right.
Because no matter where you turn, the deeper you look, the more secrets there are. And it's almost like a devastating future you set for yourself, because what you do is you open up a window that you'll never see far enough.
Right. And you'll never be able to go back.
You'll never be able to go back. And that's the sad thing, because many people in this field, when they decide they want to go away and they want to bow out of it, all of a sudden they'll be good for about 2-3 weeks thinking, I'm reinventing my life, and I'll be damned. All of a sudden, you've been waiting for it all your life. Now comes the saucer down the freeway next to your car. And here you are. You're sucked right back into it again.
It's like
and
they
you know.
You
know that, John, that's true. It's almost like they're watching you, and they feel if you can help them in some way, open people's minds, they don't want to let some of the people go. And so they recognize that you're at the end of your avenue, and to bait you on, they make an appearance. And I don't think anything's by accident. You know, I believe that they really have an eye on what's going on here. Now you're going along, you're thinking outside the box. And then what happens is there's going to be some event in your life that takes place. And it's usually a life-changing event. It's going to be either a traumatic event, it's going to be a sighting, which is very traumatic. No matter how much you want to say that you want to see a UFO or meet an alien, it's a completely different thing when you're looking at one or you're seeing the craft. I can tell you that I know individuals that have talked all their life about wanting to see a craft. They see one, and even though they have eyewitnesses with them, nobody even starts talking about it for maybe 5 or 10 minutes because it's so overwhelming. Even though they're in the UFO community, it's so overwhelming. They thought they were preconditioned to be accepting of it. They aren't. Their brains are firing, and they go almost into a catatonic state for about 5 or 10 minutes just to process what the hell they just saw. And then all of a sudden it's like, did you see what I just saw? But it's delayed. It's a delayed reaction.
Right.
It's very, very interesting.
So your experience, what was the one thing you led us up to, you know, everything that could cause it? What was the one experience in your life that you said, you know, you're going to go?
Well, I think the thing was is that I saw, I heard, you know, John, when I first brought this out years ago, nobody was talking about it.
Right.
But then you start hearing these people talk, and there's, granted, when things start from anew, you're getting fresh information. You're getting virgin information. That's the best time to research, because by the time it's spoken about on the internet or books have been written, now all the people who want to falsify reports so they can feel like they want their time on stage, or they want to write a book, or they want people to listen to them as friends at the UFO conference, the fictionalizing starts. So it becomes very diluted. It becomes harder to now look at the research. Right now, it's almost impossible, because you have a bunch of people who are experiencing real events, but then you have other people that are borderline psychotic that are picking up onto a subject matter that triggers them in some psychological way, and they can be shapeshifters. They're the ones that you think you're getting legitimate reports from, and all of a sudden you realize you're not. It whittles down the time. For me, I don't think it was any of the one event, John. I think that the reason I'm doing this is based on faith, okay? I haven't had encounters or anything of the such like that, like a lot of other people have, but I take it on faith because I've seen people whose lives have been destroyed by what they're sharing with me. Okay, we had eyewitnesses as high as colonels, full-blown colonels coming out saying they saw the dinosaurs.
Tell them about the lieutenant colonel that saw it.
There was a case, for example, back in 1988 in Bishopville, South Carolina, in which a young boy who was 17 years old by the name of Christopher Davis, he was a young black kid who lived there, and he at 2 o'clock in the morning, he was changing a tire, all of a sudden out by a swamp, by the periphery of a swamp area. He says all of a sudden he hears something, and he's looking up, and he's seeing this large figure running towards him across a field, and he said it scared him because he thought somebody was coming to attack him. So he quickly threw everything in his car by the time it got to him, and he started his car, and just as he started taking off, this thing threw itself on its roof. He described it as a half-man, half-lizard, or a dinosaur man.
Wow.
And it was on the top of his roof, and it was reaching down over his windshield, and it was grabbing onto the antenna, and finally, he turned a corner, and this thing leapt off or fell off or something to the sort. Now, this sighting was pretty profound because the kid was so shaken up. I know the sheriff. His name is Liston Truesdale. He's a friend of mine. This is an FBI trained sheriff out in South Carolina. He's not Boss Hogg. Although the press likes to present everybody like that as Boss Hogg.
Right.
This guy wore Italian suits every day on the job. It wasn't the Boss Hogg hat and you know, khakis. The sightings continued for about 2 weeks to the point of where Dan Rather and CBS News, wasn't it Dan? Was it Dan, right? CBS?
It's that clip you have, right?
Yeah. Well, Dan Rather's actually talking about sending a reporter down to find out about this lizard man that has an entire community.
What year was this?
1988.
Okay.
So here we have national press talking about a lizard man. And they go down there and investigate. Well, events happen after that. When things mellowed out, of course, it turned into a circus. They found a sergeant with the Air Force dressing up in a lizard outfit trying to con everybody. Now, whether he was doing it on his own or he was being told to do it is another thing altogether. It's really easy to have a report like this, and then suddenly, oh, here's a guy with a lizard outfit running around.
Yeah.
He happens to be a sergeant in the Air Force, right? And it became very dangerous because a lot of people showed up in South Carolina, and they showed up with hound dogs and guns. They wanted to go hunt this thing down and kill it.
Wow.
And so it turned out to a potentially dangerous situation. During these whole events, when this happened, there was a family of 4 people that were actually, post-event, there were a family of 4 people laughing, an older son, 2 younger kids, and a mother, laughing about the incident, driving past where it happened after getting something at McDonald's or Pizza Hut. And as they're laughing, all of a sudden the car comes to a screeching halt because here this thing is standing in the middle of the road.
Wow.
And it pulls off to the side, and the mother said, and I read the reports, Sheriff Justin Truesdale separated all the individuals, the whole family, because they were so traumatized, got individual reports from each one to correlate to see how they match. And based on their perspective, he says these people saw something. This guy, being apparently, was up to 7 feet, 7.5 feet tall, to where even just his waist came up to the top of the window, because they weren't going to stick their head out, but it was standing right next to the window. And the little girl is the one that said, was screaming something about it being a lizard. And Now, people say they see fur. We'll get to Lieutenant Colonel. I'm building up to that, John. Okay. I haven't lost track. It's easy for me to lose track. But, they saw fur on the animal. And Liston has been for years thinking, well, this was like a skunk ape or maybe a bear or something like that. And it's not that. It's just that there are more advanced reptoids and reptilians than there are others. There are some human beings that are flying jets, like John Lear here. But then there's others that still hunt with the spear in the forest that wear the skins of animals. So we can't think it's any different. If anything else is sharing our terrestrial biology here, we can't think, well, they've all got to be advanced ETs.
Exactly. Right.
Not necessarily so. There might be some living in cavern systems close to the Earth's surface that remain hidden because they might feel that we would shoot them. Well, obviously, that thing in South Carolina proved that. No wonder they're not going to come out.
Yeah, really.
Right? But also, if you're a primitive being, you're probably going to be killing a bear or something like that, using the skin for warmth. Remember, they're probably warm-blooded, but at the same time, because we know that because the dinosaurs were not entirely cold-blooded.
Right.
So there's that diffused area, that gray area there. So people got to get out of this idea of thinking cold-blooded all the time. They might have reptilian feces, but might still have warm blood, be endothermic versus ectothermic. And what happened was, is I think that these things are actually grabbing furs, grabbing animal skins, either as disguise or as warmth, or anything else that they might need. And it doesn't necessarily mean that you ran up against a Bigfoot. Because in every story you hear down in South Carolina, you hear about maybe seeing some fur, but then it had three toed claws like a lizard. And that doesn't normally match. Right? Most people thinking, well, it doesn't normally match. But there was one guy, Holloman, who had seen this. I talked to him. He saw this little being, he says a little man, but he was like a lizard man. And he was short, and he was very skinny, and he ran across the road just as Earl was coming down the road, and he looked at it, and he actually stopped when he was walking. He stopped and looked. And he said this thing stood to the side of him and looked at him, and he thought it was like a little child type of being, like maybe a lizard thing, whatever it was, that was kind of a kid because it was just so skinny and small. And it sat there and looked at him, and then he said it disappeared so quickly into the brush you couldn't even see it, just disappeared. Now, the Lieutenant Colonel was somebody that was in the Army Corps of Engineers. He was coming back from a Baptist wedding rehearsal, and Baptists don't drink, so don't get any impression that he was a drunk or something like that. Coming back late at night, driving alongside the swamp, his wife was sitting next to him asleep in the car. And then all of a sudden he looks to his left and he sees something off to his rearview mirror, and next to the car here, just behind the driver's side, is something running alongside him. And he said he was doing about 37 miles an hour. So you have this thing running alongside him. Of course, he's thinking, what the heck? And he pulls back and he says it pulled alongside him and then looked back at him as it was just past the rearview mirror, looked kind of down and at him while he was running. He said this was a half man, half dinosaur.
Wow.
Half man, that is a full bird colonel. This is somebody that is trained to take observations under highly stressful conditions in battle and such like that, so they can report back for intel. This is somebody that holds it together, that doesn't really panic. And he says he took off, he pulled forward to the car, and then ran off into the woods. And his wife woke up just as she saw this thing running off the road into the woods. And it didn't dawn on her because she's just waking up as to what happened. But he was so shook, he called the sheriff up. And he says, I just want to tell you this. And he says, well, do you want to make a formal report? He says, I don't know, but I have to call my attorney and ask him. So he calls his attorney. His attorney advises him, are you getting ready to retire?
Yeah.
And he's like,
you're going to be retired.
This is Sheriff Liston Truesdale telling me the story. He's like, they asked him, are you going to retire soon? And he told him his plans. His plans were he's just about to be promoted to Brigadier General. And he says, if you go out with this report publicly, you can understand what it might do to your career. And he says, also, you're going to get all these local yokels, I mean, all these out-of-state people coming up and asking you questions. Are you ready, prepared for that? And he just wasn't prepared for that. So he wouldn't make an on-the-record formal statement because he was worried about it. Within a year, he was dead.
You're a kid.
No, within a year, he was
dead. What were the circumstances surrounding the death?
It was a health problem. That's all I know. The wife, to this day, won't talk to anybody about the count. Sheriff Liston Truesdale is very adamant about saying, I don't want to go disturb her because this was a very disturbing thing because it was right just before the death of her husband, and then she might have suspicions.
Yeah.
But of course, now we're missing out on a general that we know had a personal reptoid sighting. So that, when you get reports like that, and then you hear the sincerity of all the people after you filter them out, you get rid of all the wackos that come out. Oh, I met a reptoid, and he was in my bedroom.
the pixelated videos and the
right. Well, no, I'm getting ready to duplicate the stuff that's on the internet with the pupils. I know how it's happening because I'm in the film industry and television industry. You have a key light off to the left and to the right of the camera, behind the cameraman. The lights are off to the side. The whites, the black on each side of the pupil are being washed out by the reflections of the white light,
yep.
Which makes it look like it's vertical black, because all they're seeing is vertical black because all the edges are squeezed in,
yep.
Because of the light. Okay, we see it all the time. We have to correct for it, especially if somebody's tired and their eyes are red and a little bit glossy. Like you'll notice with Bush, yep. And Janie, all these guys, they're tired. They're sitting under these lights. You'll see that there's lights off the left and right, because if they turn their heads and look up, you'll see that the white lights are still in their pupils, but sure. Now not dead center of their they're still off the side of the pupils, not dead center. But when they look at the camera, back at the camera, here it comes again.
So is that why
it's
all
an optical
people,
illusion?
Well, is that why all these people sit there and say, "Well, he's got a red," and then the sight? You know, yeah. People are always saying, "Well, we know that Bush is a reptoid. We know this. We know this." Are they saying that because they see this red light phenomenon?
They're saying it because they've seen the videos.
Yep.
They've heard people like David Icke blame our world's leaders for all. No, take the blame. You know, this is the problem.
Right.
They're taking the blame away from Bush. They're getting him off.
Okay.
They're saying it's not really their fault because they're reptoids. And
yeah.
You know what? This is an easy thing to do. It's easier for us to blame the ills of our world on some creatures that aren't here to defend themselves or to say, what the hell are you talking about? We're not taking responsibility. And even in the old days, when they wanted to blame somebody for problems, they turned on women and called them witches or people, and they burned them at the stake.
Yep.
So it's very easy for us humans to fall back into that mentality of getting on a witch hunt and going after people. Now, no, they're not guys, and they're here to self-profit, and they're here to sacrifice human lives for their own means.
Right.
That, to me, is draconian. That, to me, is saying that if there's an ancient reptilian part of their brain, they've slipped back into that horrible, horrible, draconian part of themselves. Not the healing serpent side. Not the loving wisdom serpent side. They've fallen too much over into that other realm. And they're operating from that. So everybody's a reptoid. Everybody has a dragon inside them. It's a matter of where you reach inside your own soul in order to draw that out. Because if you draw it out and you tap into it, you will become an absolute ass, or you will become really cool to be around, and you'll be helpful to people, and you'll be uplifting to society. It seems like there's no middle ground. People don't want to sit there on the fence with this issue. They're all evil. Or you get the others that, oh no, they're all good.
Yeah.
And it's not that way. Why should we think humans are so distinct amongst ourselves that we're the only ones with bipolar emotions and spirituality? It exists in all
right,
of them.
Right.
And remember, there's some of them, just like there are some of us, who do not agree with the draconian powers that they're under now. And they're hoping for a new age as well. And that's what I'm getting from reports from people. More than two people have said the same things. They didn't know each other. They said that they're waiting for a new change of management, even in their own structure.
What recent reports have you been hearing here lately that have probably like really perked your interest that you might be able to share with us? Is there anything that's been recent that you thought, wow, I need to really look this over?
What about the mutilation?
Well, that's interesting, because I happen to be up in that area where the mutilations are occurring up in Montana. And here I am, the reptoid guy, suddenly getting involved in mutes. Well, when you know that there's nobody else locally to enter that area, even though it's outside your field, you owe an obligation to everybody that you talk to every year back at the conference to at least go out there and drive out and see what the hell's going on.
Sure.
Instead of just letting the story get buried. So I think the mutilations actually are appearing to be beings, and I'm not the first one to say this, by the way, okay? Beings that are actually trying to point out environmental problems with ours that are undiagnosed yet and potentially dangerous for us. And what they're doing is they're testing animals, and they're coring out their anus, they're taking the cheek, because they're taking samples of where the food goes into the body, they're taking samples of where the food comes out. And by comparing the two, you can see what's been absorbed into the system. You take the udder, because that's the other exit point of the process, to see where it's taking place. I'm not sure about the eyes or the ears. That's kind of weird, but I'm only putting fragments together that I can see.
Right.
And that we're actually being pointed out. There's a reason that they leave the bodies behind. Everybody talks about that, okay? And it's because they're trying to give us a sign. Not so much that they're here, but they want us to investigate what they're investigating. Okay, they're trying to be like doctors, laying everything out and saying, look inside the animal, start taking your own samples.
Right.
Right? Take your own samples, find out what's going on. And we have the cases, of course, where, you know, there's been mutilations where they find the U.S. Army medic bag, you know, with the rusty scalpel. Or a whole bunch of stones gathered together.
Yep.
You know, I think these are actually staged events.
Yeah.
And then there's the real events.
Right.
This one up in Valier was interesting so much that it was a classic mutilation, perfect lines, no deviations from the lines. Some of the mutilations, even though they have clean cuts, they're kind of jagged clean cuts type of thing. This was so beautifully done. It was massive.
Was a laser or something?
It was a laser. I got to the site. I interviewed the sheriffs and sheriff from Tom Kuka and also Peterson, the rancher. Interviewed them. They allowed me to take whatever samples I wanted. I took all the samples from around the anus, the udder, the cheek. I started doing the cheek, the eye, and I thought, you know, this isn't going to be good enough. So I actually took out the knife and I cut the entire head off this 1,300-pound, you know. It wasn't very nice, but, you know, by the time I got there, now this is like 2-3 weeks later, this thing was stinking.
Right.
Oh,
and so
yeah.
You're sitting there on a partially rotted corpse with all these maggot-infested sides to it, and you're cutting its head off, you know, and I'm sitting here thinking, man, this is hard. You know, I'm a vegetarian. this was not easy for me. But it's one of the sacrifices, you know, John. You put yourself in really horrible situations sometimes in order to get to the bottom of it.
Yeah.
It turns out. Let me just finish this. It turns out. it turns out I take the head. There's a TV show now I've discovered coming out like 4 days later. Linderholm Moulton Howe is part of it. They get out to the carcass. It's missing its head. Of course, she's very upset because I've removed all the evidence. So
she told me about that.
There's inferences that I took it without permission. That's not the case. Tom Kuka, the sheriff, came on George Norrie with me and explained the situation, explained to everybody that I had the permission to take it. They said, take whatever you want. You know, so I think it was just a matter of professional jealousy. I bowed her greatness because, you know, hey, listen, she's been doing this for years. But if you're not on the scene and it takes you three, four, five weeks to get there, then people just can't leave it alone hoping that the expert's going to come along. They have to take the initiative and gather the samples and then call maybe the experts. In this case, I didn't need to because I was correlating with the sheriff's department up there, getting in touch with scientists. The television show that was there they wanted me to give the head to them so they can get it inspected. However, as with many production companies, and you gentlemen know this, they don't always keep their word of what they're going to say if you don't get it in writing.
Right.
They'll disappear with samples and you'll never hear from them again.
Right.
You know, that's just show business. And because they don't have integrity. They don't have half the integrity that we do most of the time. Because they're thinking about what looks good and then dump it in the trash.
Absolutely right.
We got the samples out to scientists on the East Coast in Florida. They arranged for the scientists, because these are people that they talk to through their network. They were going to have a look and analyze these items. They're all willing to say something, that this was man-made, it wasn't animal predation, these were cuts that were too defined, very, very sharp instruments. The samples that I've looked at, one of the key things that I noticed that was used, there was heat used in the cutting process, is because when you look at the termination line of where the incision is, I noticed that something looked weird when I was on site. And when I got under the scope, it verified what I was thinking when I was on scene, which is that when they cut, some of the heat from the hairs, like a curling iron, curled the hairs over, and the tips of the hairs joined the melted fat on the inside, and then when it got cold again, they melted to the inside of the fat on the inside of the termination, on the inside of the skin. So you have hair curled around the incision, and then the tips of it glued into the fat that's hardened up on the inside. So you know it's heat being applied, because a cut wouldn't do that. A cut wouldn't heat the fat up to make it so receptive for hair follicles to slip into to get glued to. It just wouldn't happen. And so put that along with the fact that there were no footprints. There was an indentation line about 3.5 feet wide, a couple inches across. It was V-shaped. This might be, for example, there's no tires. Why would there be an indentation line? It might be where a craft has hovered down above ground, has lowered a platform. The edge of the platform has lowered itself into the dirt. They're carrying something very heavy off it. That's why the platform embeds itself into the dirt so heavily. And maybe they deposited the cow that way. But that may be occurring, but also the fact that the cow hit with such force, because they said, when you look at where the cow hit, there was an indentation mark of where it hit and it bounced.
Really?
Now, that might be because Lynn and Moulton Howe is investigating the soil samples to see if there's any energy signatures in there. They might be wise, I'm sure they are wise, to what we're currently investigating, so they're pulling the craft further and further away from the ground so they don't leave that signature, so now they're effectively having to throw the damn things out.
Right. Wow.
Okay, because if they know that we're looking at the ground and they know that we're searching for footprints, that's one thing. Energy signatures is another. Now they have to get their craft further away from sight. So the thing, again, if that's the case, why the wedge? Why the impact site if they obviously had set down in some way? That's the question. The other thing is that the cow's carcass was never touched by a predator at all. Not even birds would go on it. 4 or 5 months later, the carcass is out there. It's out there to this day, and only now has it started to be eaten away. The rancher said, look at this. He says, I'm going to take it to an area over here where a cow died 10 days after we found this one.
It was gone.
Yeah. All that you had was a rib cage and these balls of undigested grass sitting in the middle of an empty rib cage, but it was torn to the bone.
So this thing sat out there for 2 to 3 weeks.
Witnesses saw coyotes and predators walk around it,
circling,
walk around it, and never, you know what? Even when I excised that head, there was this big stump of red, fleshy, raw meat hanging off it. Beautiful dinner for any kind of predator.
That's
and they're walking around, and they walk away.
Wow.
Now, what tells an animal not to eat? The only thing in nature that tells an animal not to eat is this is going to kill you if you eat it. The next experiment is finding out, well, do you take the flesh from a mutilated cow and feed it to an animal to see what the effects on the animal are? Now, here we get into the moral situations, because in Dulce, they would do it.
Hell yeah.
In Dulce, they wouldn't think twice.
They'd give it to John Lear.
They'd give it to him.
Let's let John Lear eat it and see what happens to him.
Or they'd cut John Lear up and feed it to
him. Yeah, that's a better one. I like
it. See what happens to the animal then.
You're going to bleed him first.
That's right. The animal that ate the mutilated cow was fine, but the one that chewed on John, this is
yeah,
in bad
both.
Shape. And the one John Rhodes, that killed it.
That is phenomenal.
So it's really, really interesting. And, with animals, the animals have an instinct that's beyond our perceptive tools, beyond anything that we could probably. I mean, come on. They're studying animals now to learn how they smell so they can build bomb detecting equipment the same as a dog's nose.
Right.
You know,
right.
So it's all this, there's a term for that they're using now. It's about bio...
I'll think of it.
It's slipping past my mind. You're looking into biology because nature's had millions of years to figure out what doesn't work and what works. So now scientists are going, forget all our R&D. Let's go back and look at the biology of animals to see what's working.
So are the animals... You used the term sensing that it's dead, but they're still not coming toward
it. They know
it.
It's dead.
So... Is it a sense of smell, or is it a different sense that is telling them that?
I would assume it's a smell sense because their smell is so darn acute.
Right.
I don't know what they're putting on these animals to keep them away.
And why? Why would they put it on there?
Because they want us to find it. They don't want us to blame the animals.
They don't want the coyotes
to eat it. They don't want us to blame the animals. Because otherwise we'd be blaming God. Thank God they just put that together right now. They don't want to blame predation.
Right.
So they're dusting it with something
that makes
predators
sense.
Don't come near, so we can see it in its full form without any chew marks around the periphery. Because usually out in farms and ranches, man, an animal dies. Within hours, there's animals chewing on it.
Yeah. I mean, it wouldn't last 5 days, much less 3 weeks.
Right.
I mean, it wouldn't last overnight.
There's a great psychological aspect to what's been going on, far more than the physical. Yeah, we can take the ships apart all we want, but if we don't know what's behind it, the reasons or who's behind it, then it doesn't do us any good. It's like the craft. We concentrate on the craft of Roswell,
right.
But then it's almost like we're too scared to start focusing on the real thing as to what the aliens look like. I think because we've been so preconditioned that anything that has a reptilian signature to it is uncomfortable to talk about because it's like saying the devil and all this, that, and the other. But not now, because I opened the subject matter up. I took it as far as I did before David Icke and other people jumped on the subject matter to broaden their conspiracy point of views or to broaden their appeal to the public because the public is talking about it, so I better talk about it type of thing. So now that the information's out, I think it's just a matter of time before we start actually, it's going to evolve, in other words. Have you noticed that? Things evolve. Even the phenomenon evolves. When we figure out this, it's going to change, and it's going to show us something different. The same thing is, like, if they're dusting it with the animal, why aren't they eating it? They want us to see it in full form. So they're staging these things. This animal, for example, up in Blair, it was only found about 12 feet away from a road. The recent animal mutilations are only just one aspect of what's really going on here. It's really a matter of how are these beings around us, what are they doing, and what are they trying to draw to our attention? Because they're doing things as signals to us, to get us to pay attention. It's not a matter of just a mutilated cow. It's a matter of why the mutilations, what's going on with our environment. Obviously, look, there have been mutilations outside NORAD's gates, in full view of security, where all of a sudden they turn around and it's there,
right
inside a secure compound. So they always do it in ways that make us realize, how about the zoo? In a petting zoo in England, there were animals mutilated. The cages were still locked. The animals were still inside.
Wow.
Same things happened to a full
buffalo. When did this happen? Did you hear that?
This is like, oh God, this was like 4 or 5 years ago.
Oh, really?
It's on the internet. You can find the report on the internet. Now, the other thing is that you have them staging things. So they stage things just like our government does. But our government stages things to cover up. They stage things to expose. Okay, now make that real clear. Our government stages things to cover up. They stage things to expose, just like with the cattle mutilations.
Okay. Of course, that makes sense.
They're trying to help the average man, not the leadership. If they wanted to help the leadership, they wouldn't be doing things like that in sensitive areas where our own leadership would be going, hey, you're not supposed to come down here. So they're defiant, and that's what I like about them. They're maverick. The guys doing the crop circles, mavericks again, whether they're aliens or like students working at Oxford University with plasma physics who have abilities to channel into the satellites overhead, to use plasma energies to do the folds, or using templates or something like that. And these... So people are trying to give us messages, but it's only people who are really attuned to it, like us who attend conventions, that are really going to keep our ears open and our minds open. But we're such a small element of society. But yet society, all of media, 6 out of 10 most top grossing movies of all time had to do with extraterrestrial contact. They're leaving it up to us to give them, to feed them the information that they could steal off our websites, work into film or TV scripts, and then provide to the public that way. Because I was told by a gentleman, and his name will come to me, back down in Montana, I just had the fortune of meeting him, William Gibson. He was a war photojournalist and cameraman during the war. And after that, he was everywhere. He was with the presidents and everything. He was the man holding the camera on the battleship in which Doolittle took off.
Wow.
So he was standing there with Doolittle and all these guys. He happened to be retired. He was up in Montana in the Bitterroot Valley in a town called Hamilton, which is where they have the big bioweapons lab that they just are starting to expand. It's really huge. But he was up there. I went to a library meeting of his because I heard this interesting gentleman was going to speak, and I wanted to go to the library and hear him speak. And before you know it, I struck up a friendship with him. We went to lunch. And during lunch, I, of course, try and hold back your own beliefs when you know somebody may know something. And he said, well, you know, I was in charge of Project Blue Book's photography for 3 years. I said, oh, you were? He goes, oh, yeah. But, you know, they were all Venus. Now, you understand, these old club guys are still very patriotic. If they were told not to say anything, they don't say it.
modern generations, we tend to blow it. We tend to release the secret more because we come from dysfunctional families, and it's all about the big secret. And we're not going to play that big secret anymore. When we find something out, we're going to tell everybody.
We want to know,
right?
Unless you're John Lear.
then all the cards are on the table.
We have this thing about them trying to stage things for us to get us to recognize it, and I'm trying to pull myself back because that was really funny and it got me off track, John, because I was thinking about how your deck would be stacked. Sorry, I'm still like a second or two behind you.
That's all we need is just hear a
pull me back.
You're having lunch with Gibson.
Oh, yes. Having lunch with Gibson. Not the guitar, the man. And he says, I was in charge of Project Blue Bit. Now, these were all, you know, all sightings of Venus. Now, here's a patriot.
Right.
I was like, okay, now I respect his patriotism.
Right, sure.
Now, how do you talk to somebody without... Now, you know, how do you lower their guard on this?
Right.
And he goes, I told him my thing about the reptoids and everything, and he thought it was really fascinating. He says, you know, he says, I wrote a story once. And I said, really? What was it? He says, it was just a short story. He says, it was about an armadillo. He says, you know, armadillo, really nobody knows where these things came from. He says, because they're so exotic looking. And he says, and they're down in Texas. I wrote one about an armadillo in Texas who was trying to get to Cape Canaveral. And he was trying to get to Cape Canaveral because he was accidentally brought here. And it wasn't his fault. But he wanted to go back. And he wanted to go back, really, because his heart kept painting for his female mate. And so he made it in this trip, jumping on board, climbing on board 18-wheelers and hopping underneath cars and stuff like that. He finally gets to Cape Canaveral. He manages to get himself on board a ship. And he says, the way I wrote the story is that all you see is an outside shot of this little armadillo looking through this window, floating in space, of the spacecraft, painting for his long-lost loved one. And then all you see is, he says, I ended the story by saying, and suddenly, looking out of the ship, his eyes got really big and he started to smile. Right. I thought, this is kind of cool.
That's cute.
This is kind of cool. And then he says, let me explain something to you, John. He says, as long as you keep telling people this is the truth, you're going to get nothing but harassment. He says, but if you channel it into a film script or into a television show, he says, they will leave you alone and they might actually help.
Yep.
Awesome.
Because they want us, I think that elements, not all, everybody,
right,
elements in our government, they want us to know, they want us to become desensitized, but they want us, they don't want us to shock people with it.
Right, right.
Okay, because you know how it is. People grow up in some, their whole life has changed. It's hard for them to adapt.
Yeah.
They're like, putting it out in TV and science fiction makes it more palatable, because then what happens is you condition people and you desensitize them to these ideas, so that when finally they do come out, we're like, oh, I already knew that. How many people, when the big event happens, if it happens in our lifetime,
yeah,
and they finally admit it, nobody's going to want to hear John Lear anymore. Nobody's
right.
going to want to hear me.
Right.
We're the people that struggle to get it out, because everybody's going to be going, I knew it.
Yep. And
I knew
and
it.
I can tell you.
I knew it. I knew it. I knew it. And I didn't say anything, but I knew it.
I can tell you this.
I knew it. I knew it.
I can tell you this. BuffTopSecret.com, every month, NSA, FBI, CIA, Navy Intel, dude, I mean by the thousands. And these are unique IPs,
mm-hmm,
unique individual computers within our government intel agencies and defense departments and everything else that are coming to this site. And they are looking at him,
John Lear, right?
They're watching that moon picture dread like crazy.
And right, you know what they're looking at? They're looking to see who John Lear is talking about.
That's
it. And you keep my name out of it, John.
Yeah. but
keep my name out of it.
You know, there's two things that they're looking at. They're looking at who's looking at him.
Right.
All right. Who's checking on John Lear? And they're wanting to see how fast does it fly? Like John Rhodes put something like this out, which is going to hit our site this weekend, I guess, or early this week.
Early this year.
And they're going to, I guarantee you, when this gets uploaded,
mm-hmm,
I'll track it, and I'll shoot you an email, and I'll show you who looked at it, and it'll blow your mind.
Oh.
And then they'll want to see how fast it spreads, how fast is...
You know what? Earlier on, when I was still back living in Vegas, I think this may have even been before I knew you, John, I was on a radio show out there. Now, I had read in the U.S. National Catholic Reporter, sitting in the library one day, and you know how it is, when you research, sometimes you don't know what you're looking for.
Right. Or you just go
out
there. You.
Right. You go out, you do a keyword string, and you go for it for the whole night and follow it around. It's a lot of it is intuitive, right, John? You use your logic, and you have to apply logic to what you're looking at, but a lot of it is intuition and gut instinct just to know where to look. I discovered this article written in the U.S. National Catholic Reporter talking about how the Vatican had installed that observatory up in Mount Graham for contact extraterrestrial life to convert to Catholicism. Now, I thought to myself, now that's really outrageous. I got on a radio interview, and I talked about discovering this, and I swear to God, within at least 2 to 3 months, I'd hear about other researchers now introducing this into their talk, because it's so damn funny to think that a religious group could be so egotistical to actually take over a sacred Apache Indian territory, and our government facilitates them putting an observatory up there. Now they backtracked out of it. You notice something about this, the whole thing about the Vatican and this alien thing is that you go back and you look at the National Catholic Reporter, you do a word string search on any of their documentation, you're going to find out that these guys, once that article came out and it was exposed to the UFO community, and everybody started talking about pointing that article out that I had discovered. Now, nobody knew the source of it, because now it is. You just don't have a name attached. Everybody just hears the information, and they start talking about it. So I don't fault people for repeating it and not giving sources. You can't give sources all the time. It's impossible. You know that, John. You hear things. If you stop to even pause where I heard that, half your lecture would be sources, right? So you just need to talk it out. But the thing is when you start looking into it, you'll start recognizing that in the Vatican's own media output, they start, after that article appears, they start using the term alien in different contexts, not associated with that. So now they can say, oh, we didn't mean alien. It wasn't until they were accused of saying aliens, they're talking about aliens, that they suddenly go back, and all their press releases sometimes will have, oh, this alien division from Mexico, or it's alien to our world, or, you know, and they change the context. So when people go back and look, they go, oh, well, they used the term alien all along, and it's never having to do with aliens. Why do they think this one is?
That's right.
So the Vatican Secret Service is sitting there in their basement with the computers reading above top secret and probably going, oh, Lord Jesus, look what you're saying.
You know? We had somebody put a thread up about the priest, the Vatican guy who came out and said, you know, we're in contact.
It's Malchizedek or...
It was Sarducci or... What's his name?
No, that's this guy. Come on down. That's part of...
No, I know, but his name was just...
his name
was just like it, though. His name was just like it. It was very similar to the guy on Saturday Night Live. It may have been Barducci.
I think you are right.
Barducci.
It was. It was some. I mean, it was very similar to Saturday Night Live.
I read.
In any case, somebody gets this thing up, and the thread kind of catches fire. And there's a lot of people discussing it. It's getting a lot of hits. And the Vatican had been on maybe four times in the last month. You know, we got a hit from the Vatican. Within 3 days of that thread going up, Vatican. I mean, there was like 14 or 15 static IP addresses from the Vatican that were just hammering this thread. Just reading it. Right behind them, NSA. Right behind them, FBI. Now, you tell me, these guys, they're covering it up, but why are they looking?
Let me ask you a question. When you know the Vatican looks at this stuff, and considering the relationship with the serpent, and they hear somebody like John Rhodes or John Lear refer back to a reptoid or a lizard man, what do you think they're thinking? Especially when they go back to the oldest text and they go, wait a minute, this thing out of
Satan?
Well, they're thinking to themselves, go back to the oldest text that they have, and they're going to find that these things have legs and arms, and this starts matching, this is not a normal picture. And when they start realizing, because they know that they had to build their own observatory because they don't believe that they're going to be told the truth by our government. So they had to build their own observatory to look out there to see what might be coming. Now, what makes them think they're going to get out there and look around and see something out there unless they've been told something's coming back?
Right.
Now, the Vatican might be faced with a situation where you get a higher being that comes back here saying, listen, this is all out of whack here, and you're going to end yourself as a species. We could really care less because we're living underground, but you got to straighten up your environment. You got to, you know, you have potential. They can't. It's a wink and a nod. So when they look at that kind of subject matter, and then they recognize things about revelation, and the Pope talks to Bush about revelation, and Bush is already realizing that he is the man to push us through revelation, because he thinks he's the guy that's at the helm. These guys are pushing for that, because they think the way for a new one world order is to completely destroy the old one. You can't build a new one world order on something that's already working. So you have to lead that current order down the path of self-destruction and make it look like self-destruction.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
What you're really doing is you're selling us out to the globalists by saying, we're going to take down our own country because for you to play ball on a global level, we're going to sacrifice. We're in charge of all the business. We're going to sacrifice our nation in order to uplift everybody else.
Yep.
That's it. That's how Freemasonry works. You know, you have to be able to work for the whole thing. Now, if we're coming in contact with another species, I'm one person, and I've told other speakers that we're going to have some sort of a one world body that instead of all these bitching countries,
right.
Oh, well, the reptoid said this. Now we're going to go into 10 years of debate over what, who believes what, who gets the vote on what.
Exactly.
It's not going to happen that way.
Or where was the comma placed in that sentence
right.
that they said?
Good Philadelphia lawyer to tie that up forever. So really what we need to do is we need to have a conglomerate of different national leaders. Personally, I think it should be people from the poorest levels, really humble people, but you know that's not going to happen.
Right.
There needs to be a group, a collective group of individuals that represent all the countries, and it has to get down to a decision maker. And maybe that's to where we're headed down to, is to some sort of a dictatorship in the country, because people are so fed up with the way it is, that the only way that you can get change is through dictatorship. I don't believe in we're already a fascist state, but I don't believe in dictatorship.
Right.
But at the same time, how do you make one decision for all humanity when you have disagreeing bodies that are comprised of all of humanity?
Well,
so it's kind of a quagmire, you know?
You know, Reagan said it best. If an alien species present itself to humanity, all world wars would be over and we'd all be on the same team.
Right.
The question is, if they're already here and they know it, then your scenario, we're screwed. Because I think the one world order thing, they're not going to be able to pull it off.
They're going to pull it off, but it's going to be underground. And after we've devastated ourselves in the surface for several years, then that's going to emerge like the seed from underneath the earth, and they think they're going to start establishing a new one world order. But it's not going to be during this collapse. It'll be after the collapse, when they have fewer people, smaller food, they have the shrinking food belt able to sustain our society. We need to depopulate, because they've looked back historically at the Black Plagues and all these others that said it was the workers' age afterwards, because there were not enough workers for the jobs.
Right.
So everybody was treated more equally because everybody was uplifted. They had bigger wages and everything. These guys think like that. They think like business people who are caught up into occultism.
Right.
You know, so they're thinking, well, we'll just change the company out, but we got to get rid of the old guard. You know how a headhunter comes into a company and he's like, you're out.
Where I'm going is they're screwed, because the communication levels that humanity has at this point, I don't think they're going to be able to pull it off, and I think we're all going to kill each other.
Unless it's through the internet and through...
Right.
You know,
I think the pitchforks and the knives and the bats are going to come out, and the people are going to rise up.
No, that's one of the reasons John Alexander and that group have been working for 15, 20 years on non-lethal weapons technology, because they know the American people are going to get upset. They don't want to shoot them in the streets, but they certainly do want them to defecate and urinate and have burning skin all at once to clear the square.
I love the burning skin.
You do?
He just went to a doctor and had a lot of that cleared up.
Yes, and I'm taking dermatology stuff for it. John, you'll notice I've only been drinking water, so when I tell you, you're more interesting than I am.
He's forgotten. I'm just repeating certain points he made a long time ago.
Yeah, we stole all this.
And he's like, damn, that guy's smart.
Hey, I want to wrap this up. This is Springer, and on behalf of the Above Network LLC, on behalf of AboveTopSecret.com.
And Reptoids.com.
And will you quit banging the table? Oh, yeah.
And Reptoids.com.
And Reptoids.com.
Thank you very much.
That is reptoids.com, C-O-M. And I think everybody who's a member, all the visitors, go check that site out. We're gonna put a banner up on ATS.
Oh, awesome.
And link
thanks.
To you.
I appreciate that.
New official friend of AboveTopSecret.com. Click on the banner. Click the link. John Rhodes, you're a scholar and a gentleman. Thank you.
I appreciate it. You all are as well.
ATS Mix from AboveTopSecret.com is over. You've been listening to the ATS Mix with Dave Rabbit and Johnny Anonymous. If you have a comment, suggestion, an opposing view, or would like to participate in a future show of ATS Mix, please contact Dave or Johnny at www.abovetopsecret.com. The views expressed on ATS Mix do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of the Above Network, LLC, or any of its affiliates. Thanks for listening. You may now reattach your tinfoil hat. Thank you.